Our scripture reading from today comes from just three little lines. I did a search on Bible Gateway for earth and creation, and there were over 1,000 entries, so I kind of had to whittle it down. The first one is from Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth a formless void. Psalm 24:1. The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. And Job 38:4. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. So when I was preparing for today, I got to thinking about the earth and whether or not it could save itself without our help. There are many believers that think we can do much damage to the earth, as much damage as we want, and that the earth will be okay. And thus my study began. So let me back up. During the rummage sale, I was in conversation with an engineer friend of mine, and we were talking about the earth being able to save itself. I made the comment that the earth was alive, and he looked at me questioningly and attempted to explain that it was not alive. He went on about nitrogen and tectonic plates and such, and I said, but life grows out of the earth. And then he called me a romantic. I am a romantic, but I'm also a thinker. I jokingly said to him a few days later, an engineer, a theologian, and a romantic poet walk into a bar. What do you think their conversation's gonna be about? A cosmopolitan, maybe? Lloyd Gehring, in his book, Tomorrow's God, states that the feminist theologian, Rosemary Radford Ruther, suggests that we need scientist poets who can retell this story of the cosmos and the Earth's history in such a way that can call us to wonder, to reverence for life, and to the vision of humanity living in community with all its sisters and brother beings. It is on the basis of this new story that, for better or for worse, the global world is already coming to birth in the collective consciousness of humankind. A lot of big words. Rosemary Radford Ruther just so happened to be one of my professors at Claremont School of Theology and one of my favorite feminist theologians. She wrote a book titled Gaia and God, an Ecofeminist Theology of Earth Healing. Much of the information that I will be sharing today comes from Gehring, Ruther, in the National Geographic documentary, One Strange Rock. How many of you are watching that? Anybody? Two? My engineer friend just so happened to give me a copy of the National Geographic issue that covers what we learn about Earth from space through an astronaut's eyes. And so I became the scientist, poet, theologian. In the beginning, before any written words were written down, there were rocks whirling around in space, a cosmic storm. Rocks collided and kept colliding until the large rock we know as Earth was created. According to the scientists, that is. And according to the National Geographic article, there are 13 things that make life on Earth possible. The authors of the article report, Earth is well equipped as a planet and ideally placed in our solar system and galaxy to support life as we know it. The product of some 4.6 billion years of cosmic construction, our planet is flush with life thanks to a fortuitous set of conditions. From the optimal chemical makeup of our planetary core to our safe distance from the hidden black hole at the heart of our galaxy. So bear with me while I read these 13 things. Our planet recycles life-friendly carbon over time. Carbon dioxide is one of many greenhouse gases that trap and keep Earth's surface warm enough to support life. The static surfaces of Venus and Mars keep carbon locked in the air and rocks. But over millions of years, Earth dynamically cycles this vital element through its air, land, and sea due to the constant action of plate tectonics. Oh, interesting how that came back up. When we have an ozone layer, we have an ozone layer to block harmful rays. Ancient plant-like organisms in the ocean added oxygen to the atmosphere and created a high-altitude layer of ozone that shielded early land species from lethal radiation. We have a big moon to stabilize our axial wobble. Earth is tilted, and with respect to the sun, and teeters as it spins, thankfully not out of control. This tiny wobble can shift the climate from hot to icy every 41,000 years, and might vary more without the moon's stabilizing pull. Earth's varied surfaces support many life forms. The dramatic effects of plate tectonics formed during different surface habitats and terrains. This spurred adaptation, helping life diversify and survive several mass extinctions. Our magnetic field deflects solar tempests, sparked by charged particles from the sun, mesmerizing auroras and a visual reminder of our magnetic field, which deflects the bulk of the star's damaging radiation and solar outburst. I'm going to read number 6, and then I think I'm going to move on. We're just at the right distance from the sun. Earth orbits in the so-called Goldilocks zone. Has anybody heard this before, the Goldilocks zone? Jose? Where it's not too close and not too far from the sun for water to be liquid on its surface. So we're not too close, we're not too far. And there's a bunch of other technical stuff that I'm going to pass on. These are the things that scientists say make life on Earth possible. From reading this and from watching the documentary, the astronauts, though, they look at Earth as a living, breathing, working planet. This planet is the only one with an oxygen-rich environment. Oxygen is a way to release energy, like when we breathe. The Earth produces salt in Africa. Dust from Africa floats in the sky and is a perfect fertilizer of the Amazon rainforest. The rainforest keeps the whole planet breathing. All systems on Earth work together for us to breathe. Too much oxygen, we fry. Too little oxygen, we choke. There must be a balance of 20.95% oxygen for survival. Humans are affecting the climate. After 11,700 years of relative stability, people are now loading the atmosphere with carbon, rapidly tipping the Earth into a new climatic age. And without the ozone layer, we would have to live underwater. Some interesting facts. And there's much to contemplate. Earth is not a dead rock. It is alive. Psalm 24:1 states, The earth is the Lord's and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. This is the mystery of cosmic creativity. From a theologian's viewpoint, God created the mind, the heart, the soul of all of these scientists who study the cosmos, the galaxy, the planets, stars, earth, all the components of the earth, what lives on the earth, what makes up the earth, and what makes up planets, animals, humans, cells, atoms, molecules, and even bacteria. There is the study of air, water, fire, heat, oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, and membranes. Somehow in our existence, or in my existence, a drive was built into us internally to look beyond the periodic tables and the dissection of frogs in ninth grade, to want to study the elements, the body, how energy works, why some things move faster than others, why our cells work the way they do, the discovery of DNA and how our DNA is the same as the DNA of the earth. The biblical writers do not state that they are scientists, but did make a profound statement in saying that we were created from dust. The dust of the earth, the stardust of the cosmos, and our bodies all come from the same source. Pierre Teilhard, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Teilhard Chardin, a man of faith, a man of science, and a thinker, stated, "Earth is a living organism, not only spatially, but across time, and that the universe evolves along the axis of the complexification of matter. The planet Earth grows through stages of development that are not repeatable, any more than stages of organic growth from fetus to adult are repeatable." He believed that, like an organism, the Earth will eventually die. But then, the Job passage reflects on how we have so little understanding of the foundation of creation. "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." Now, our scientists are studying the earth and creation, but can only hypothesize about the start of all of this and the end of all of this. Likewise, theologians and romantic poets. And then there's the study of ecology. Ecology comes from the biblical science of natural environmental communities. There is a good possibility that the earth could save itself because all the systems seem to work together, except for the human creation. God is seen as creating a living world and beings, created in the image and likeness of God. We are capable of continuing life on this planet. Rosemary Radford Ruther states, "Nature is not private property to be done with as one wishes, but stewardship over an earth that remains ultimately God's." Throughout history, we have seen urban growth, technological development, and military destruction, and the effects of this on our environment. Family farms have been bought out by corporations who produce mass produce livestock. Topsoil has eroded due to mismanagement of the land. And then there could be the problem of overpopulation. There seems to be a major issue. This seems to be a major issue for many ecologists. Earth is one living organism, and like all living organisms, we ought to care for the earth and the levels of oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon. When scientists discovered that there was a hole in the ozone layer, certain products were banned. We see on the news now how plastics are killing ocean life. Good news. I just read that the UK is planning to ban plastic straws, stirrers, cocktail stirrers, and plastic-stemmed cotton swabs to curb ocean pollution. And Malibu, California is doing the same. A company in the UK is paving roads with recycled plastic. And Hasbro Toy Company is going to reuse old plastic toys to make park benches. We can be responsible. I think about life and death. I am like the romantic poets who stare into the stars and the galaxy and wonder about our universe. I look at the leaves on the trees, and I love to watch flowers bloom. It's all very magical. But as a human being who breathes and eats and drinks and moves and gets sick, I think about how our bodies work and what makes some healthier than others. I ponder our differences and how we are all unique, even though we are all made from the same elements. I think about the divine creator, and I think about the planet we live on. I have wondered, in my morbid mind, if natural disasters play a part in Mother Nature's evolution. I am fascinated with tornadoes and hurricanes, tsunamis and earthquakes. I think about every living system being relational. I am not trained as a scientist, and so I read and study what the scientists have to say and measure what they say with my own observations. And I have to do that with theologians also. I do not know if everything I read is true, but someone went to a lot of effort to study the effects of overpopulation, military destruction, and waste on our planet. Someone studies the effects of destroying rainforests and our overuse of materials that take many, many years to break down. As people of faith and in covenant with our Creator, I would think that even though we believe Earth is God's, whatever that can mean in all its expansiveness, that we would care for creation and not its destruction. We talk about caring for the planet now and for the benefit of future generations, but do we truly understand the destructive powers of many of the tools of society? On a personal note, I participated in the 1993 Great Salt River cleanup. Does anybody remember the flood of 1993, May 1993? Yeah, quite a few. The Mill Avenue Bridge scaffolding collapsed. At that time, I worked for Harris Trust Bank, and we had a group go out with our trash bags and our gloves and those poles where you can pick up paper and stuff to a certain spot along the Salt River to pick up the refuse from the flooding. In 1989, Phoenix Recycles started. As of 2017, this is good news, the city is at 86% participation rate in the recycling program. Now, as you know, I'm a bit strange. I got bit by the recycling bug with the Salt River cleanup and the Phoenix Recycles program. I sometimes call myself a recycle Nazi. It kills me when I go places and they don't have recycling. If I don't see a recycle bin, guess where it goes? Back with me. Russ and I, and he can attest to this, even bring home our plastics, our bottles, and our cans if the hotels that we stay in don't have a recycling program. Of course, we don't do that coming from Hawaii because, you know, that would be a little bit of a different. But in our car, we bring it back and put it in recycling. Unfortunately, I was not able to find the Sun City numbers. So if anybody knows the Sun City figures to that, because I know Sun City has a great recycling program also. Frank Lloyd Wright believed in designing structures that were in harmony with humanity and its environment. a philosophy he called organic architecture. And it's interesting to see how he built one of his first house into the side of a mountain to live in harmony with the environment. Rosemary Redford Ruther stated, "Our task is not to indulge in apocalyptic despair, but to continue the struggle to reconcile justice in human relations with a sustainable life community on Earth." The UCC is part of Creation Justice Ministries, and there is such a thing called eco-justice. Some believe that the planet is a living thing that can heal itself. All right, so I'm a scientist, I'm a poet, I'm a theologian. Now I'm putting on the hat, eco-justice feminist theologian. And I walk the tightrope, or maybe the thin line, of care for the earth and the story of life after death and a new earth. I am aware of ecological consciousness, and we as humans, scientists, poets, ecologists, theologians, are all trying to understand our place in this biotic relationship. Do we truly have dominion, or is there a cosmic power that is at play? We study, but do we fully understand? From another passage in Job, God says to Job, "Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? And who has put wisdom in the inward parts or given understanding to the mind?" What does this all matter? It matters because all we do affects the other. God created the world and said it was good, good. Do we all take it for granted? In our God consciousness, can we look at the microcosm and the macrocosm and state that it's all good? Or do we, as covenantal partners in creation, need to make sure that our biotic community stays good? Amen.